Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Okay. I was not expecting that rejoin. And I just need to know, Field Yates, if you had to get a brand tattooed on you, what would it be?
Probably Rice Krispies.
Okay. Specific,
maybe French
quick.
Red hot sauce.
I mean, do you put it on everything?
I put that, you know what, on everything. Yeah.
I came close there for a second.
No, I was prepared for it. Yeah, no, we have the what do we call it? The dump button? Drop button?
Yeah, we'll be fine.
Yeah, I was ready to go.
Okay, just
Thank
in
you.
Case. Yeah.
No, I can clean it up. Okay. This is Janae and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and ESPN Plus alongside Field Yates. I'm Alyssa Lang. Gotta figure out what I would want tattooed on me. Might go Waffle House. House logo.
Like
feel
that.
Like I'm pretty brand loyal there. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. All of our guests appear on the Goodyear Hotline, and we're going to go out to the Goodyear Hotline right now, where we find our ESPN MLB writer June Lee to talk about all things MLB. Because if you were following the trade deadline on Twitter, it may have felt like every player on every team ended up in a different place because there was so much movement today. Chris Bryant to San Francisco. Javi Baez going to the New York Mets. John Lester headed to the Cardinals. So, June, welcome in. Thank you for joining us. Which deadline trade from today do you think will have the biggest impact come October?
Oh, man. I think it's probably the Chris Bryant deal. I mean, when you look at what happened with the Scherzer trade and the Trey Turner trade last night, it felt like that was kind of this massive explosion that subsequently set off a bunch of other explosions today, because the Dodgers getting both Scherzer and Trey Turner just up the talent level on that team. And that's already like a video game roster to begin with. That's kind of underperformed, I think, this season. I think the Padres thought that they were going to get Scherzer. They didn't. The Giants also need to go out and improve, especially given how kind of surprising their season has been so far. But I would probably point towards that Chris Bryant trade with the caveat that, like, a lot of this stuff only happens because of what the Dodgers did yesterday.
All right, so June, the Cubs traded everybody, almost literally everybody on the roster. I know how Cubs fans are feeling right now. They're all very sad because there's a lot of nostalgia. Those players, Javi Baez and Chris Bryant and Anthony Rizzo, amongst others, contributed to so many wins, a World Series championship included. But how, if there was a fan of the Cubs who did not have emotions right now, but could eventually develop them, how should that person be feeling about what the Cubs did today and what it means for their future going forward?
I would say if you take out all the emotions and you're totally cold about the situation, which is obviously hard to do given the World Series title there and the fact that it broke the curse, cautiously optimistic.
Okay.
I think the Cubs kind of laid down a foundation for rebuilding that they probably should have done a couple of years ago at this point, just given just the lack of success that they have had and the fact that they probably could have gotten more if they had dealt guys like Chris Bryant and Javi Baez before, Anthony Rizzo before today. I think it's one of those situations where, the Cubs needed to do something, and Jed Hoyer hinted that they could really be dealing guys, but they clearly went all in and decided to not half-ass it by trading everyone.
We're talking with ESPN MLB writer June Lee on the Goodyear Hotline. You can follow him on Twitter at June Lee. June, I'm curious to know, is there a team out there that you feel like maybe didn't do enough today, or a team that you felt like could have made a move but didn't?
There might be a little bit of personal bias in this as someone who's from Boston and still is a Red Sox fan, but I think the Red Sox were a little bit underwhelming in terms of what they could have done. I think that team has an opportunity to be one of the best in baseball, has a chance to win the World Series this year. And I think they should have been slightly more aggressive in how they approached the deadline. They acquired Kyle Schwarber. They had this massive hole at first base. Bobby Dalbec has kind of been a big disappointment there at first base this year, has been a gaping hole in the offense. And that rotation, Nate Eovaldi has been really reliable. They're putting a lot of pressure on Chris Sale to be really, really good this year, coming off of Tommy John surgery, really relying on him for the stretch run. And it's a lot of pressure for a guy who hasn't pitched since 2019. They acquired Austin Davis and Hansel Robles, which is, we'll see whether or not that improves the bullpen. Chaim Bloom has had a tendency to find kind of hidden gems in these trades that may look kind of confusing on the surface, but I think the Red Sox could have done a little bit more. I mean, they're trying to build a team there that's sustainably winning in the future and are in contention every single year, like the Dodgers. But I think you need to kind of balance the present and the future, and they have a shot this year to win a World Series, and I think you should never take the present for granted.
For those who don't know all about Jun Lee, first of all, you should, but second of all, he's our ESPN Doogie Howser. He's precocious in his baseball mind. So, Jun, I understand that, like, the number of trade deadlines that you've witnessed in your lifetime might not be the same number as some of our other MLB minds here at ESPN, but can you recall either a trade deadline, anything like today's, or, I guess, the past few days, and also, is it just me, or does the MLB postseason feel more up for grabs now than it has in, let's say, the past decade or so? I think half the MLB thinks it has a chance to win the World Series.
Yeah, I mean, like, this was so crazy. It was so wild to see all of the moves that happened today. I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that the league across the board is more mediocre than people thought coming into the year. There's a lot of close division races, but the Red Sox are in first place in the American League East. I wouldn't call them an elite team. Their rotation is kind of sketchy. You know, everyone thought the NL East was going to be really, really competitive. All of those teams have kind of been disappointing. The Mets are in first place right now, but I don't think anyone's confident that they're going to be there at the end of the season. Everything is kind of up for grabs because the field feels kind of even from a mediocrity standpoint, which is why I think so many teams had to go out and make those trades this year. I mean, people thought coming into the year that the Yankees and the Dodgers are going to be these two juggernauts, and you know the Giants are sitting in first place, and the Yankees are looking up in the American League East. So I think it's great that all these teams are feeling the urgency and the desire to go out and improve, and created as chaotic a trade deadline day as I think we've seen in a really, really, really long time.
June, you mentioned how insane today was, and I want to ask a little inside baseball journalism question, pun fully intended there. How do you go about a day like today? Are you just like finding a spot in your house and you've got three screens with Twitter and sources and all these things? Like, take us through your day on an MLB trade deadline day.
So I'm actually currently in a press box in Alabama. I'm reporting out a story here. I'm sitting in the Toyota Field, which is the stadium for the Rocket City Trash Pandas. And I've been here the last couple days, and I just happened to be sitting in the press box here. The team was nice enough to let me to camp out in the visiting radio booth. I was a part of the Baseball Tonight broadcast for the trade deadline show, so I had this like Zoom screen up. I had my iPhone, which was broadcasting me into the ESPN control room, and then I had my tweet deck up, and I also had my phone. So it was just like it was like screen mania. Kind of like I think that scene, The Matrix, where there's all those screens, but on a smaller scale, and just trying to keep up with that, and trying to make sure that I wasn't retweeting an imposter Jeff Passan account.
Yeah,
Jeff Passan. Well, June, I think the professional thing to do is to ask you a question to close the interview. I'll just tell a story involving Alabama and a minor league baseball team. Is no big deal, but about a month and a half ago, I threw out the first pitch of the Birmingham Barons game.
Wow.
It was like a
48-mile-an-hour
big
heater.
Flex.
So if people start approaching you and asking about, like, you know, what it's like to be, you know, a friend of mine down there, I just want to give you that. That's the reason why people are coming up and approaching you randomly in Alabama.
Field Yates, A-list superstar in Alabama.
Birmingham specifically. That's kind of my town. Great place.
We got to get your velo upfield before you throw another pitch out. Yeah. Jun Lee, thank you so much for joining us here on the show. You can follow him on Twitter at Jun Lee. Have a good rest of your day, June.
Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, June.
This MLB weekend preview is brought to you by Credit Karma. Visit creditkarma.com/winmoney to open your free account and start winning instant karma. Credit Karma Money. Progress starts here. We opened the segment talking about tattoos and brands that you would get tattooed on your body. And I'm quite ashamed to say that I didn't say Krispy Kreme right off the bat.
Well, you will.
Yeah.
That'll be your brand.
Just get a donut tattooed right on me. I wouldn't even do it for money. I would just do it for free because I love donuts. Right?
That sounds, I mean, listen, I'm not the world's like foremost authority on making good decisions, But that seems like a really good decision.
Seems like a great decision. We'll schedule the appointment for the donut tattoo tomorrow. We've got plenty more coming up here on ESPN Radio. What should we read into the new Aaron Rodgers deal? Everything that's happening up in Green Bay right now alongside Field Yates. I'm Alyssa Lang filling in here for Chinay Ngolick Jr. on ESPN Radio.
Chinay Ngolick Jr., the podcast.
We are starting to get some answers as far as what the future looks like for Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay. More on that in just a second. You're listening to Chinay Ngolick Jr. on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80, and ESPN Plus. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests appearing via the Goodyear hotline throughout the show. Alongside Field Yates, I'm Alyssa Lang. Chinay Ngolick Jr. is brought to you by Barbasol Shaving Cream. Barbasol comes out thick and rich and doesn't break down. That's why Barbasol is America's number one shaving cream. Close shave, America. Close shave, Barbasol. Field, are you going to shave tonight? You going to shave the beard tonight?
Absolutely. It is time. But if I do, and then when I do, I will be using Barbasol.
That is right. All right. We mentioned Aaron Rodgers, which is a topic that you and I talked about a ton last NFL season, because obviously there was plenty to talk about into the summer as well. But now it looks like he's going to have a little bit of an easier time leaving Green Bay after this season, signing a reworked deal yesterday, according to sources telling ESPN's Adam Schefter. The 2023 year in that contract voided, making 2022 the final year on his contract. I don't think this is surprising, Field. I think we all knew that if Aaron Rodgers was going to play another down as Green Bay's quarterback, there were going to have to be some concessions that gave him the freedom to leave after this season. What do you think about this deal? What do you think about him and his future with the Packers, if it is this year or beyond?
Yeah, so it's very clear, looking at the details of this reworked contract, Alyssa, that while Aaron Rodgers is still under contract for 2022, if Aaron Rodgers' discontent with the Packers percolates into 2022, he's gone. He's out. If he wants to leave, he will leave. And I don't know where leaving will take him to, but I understand now how Aaron Rodgers feels as though his future is in his own hands next season. Now, maybe Aaron Rodgers lights the world on fire again this year and the Packers win the Super Bowl and things are a little bit more hunky-dory, and some of the things that he sounded off on a couple days ago, whatever it was, is heard and received by the front office and things get back on track. But maybe they don't. And if they don't, I think Aaron Rodgers' feelings that persisted throughout this offseason are going to persist into next offseason. So without getting too far into the weeds, basically Aaron Rodgers' contract is set up for 2022 in such a way that, A, it's onerous for the Packers if they do nothing whatsoever. As cap, it's almost $47 million. We're talking about potentially a quarter of your salary cap next year being taken up by Aaron Rodgers. And, oh, by the way, the Packers haven't even re-signed or extended Devontae Adams yet. So his deal isn't even on the books for next year. They got all kinds of cap concerns in 2022. The ball will be in Aaron Rodgers' court, which is exactly what Aaron Rodgers wanted if you followed this story with any ounce of effort over the past 4 to 5 months. So I think what we got to, Alyssa, is basically the Packers bought themselves 9 months of uncomfortable potential excellence with Aaron Rodgers. So if things are going well, if they start off the season in 7-1, and to be clear, their roster is loaded. As I said yesterday on the show, if you were to ask me to do a draft of every roster in the NFL, the Packers would be in my top three picks. And whether it's number one, number two, number three, they're going to be somewhere along with the Chiefs and also the Bucks. This team is loaded. And you know what happens when you're winning? Is I get it that Aaron Rodgers is frustrated and has been, but if this team is winning and winning big and consistently during the regular season, Randall Cobb's making an impact, Devontae Adams, David Bakhtiari, all these guys who are good friends of Aaron Rodgers, all this stuff that took place during the offseason is not going to be washed away, but Aaron Rodgers won't be thinking about that nearly as much as he's thinking about, what do I have to do the following week?
Sure.
What do I have to do in the upcoming opponents? Like, where do we stand in the playoff picture? So I think what the Packers were able to do, well, I'm not even sure we can give anybody credit here, right? It felt like what they were able to resolve or meet in the middle on with Aaron Rodgers is that both sides have agreed, hey, for 9 months, I'm not sure we're going to suck it up, but for 9 months, we share a common goal that we do believe is within reach, and that's winning a championship.
Here's one of my question marks on moving forward, because I have heard the thought this week that, okay, like you just said, if Aaron Rodgers and Devontae Adams and the Packers win a Super Bowl this year, do things change? Because obviously everybody's a lot happier, everyone's content when you're winning. I go back to that Instagram post from about a week ago, Devontae Adams and Aaron Rodgers both posting on their Instagram stories pictures from The Last Dance. That tells me his mind is made up, that he only wants to be here for another year, and I'm not even sure that winning would change that, because I kind of wonder, after that press conference the other day, didn't he say something about Green Bay isn't exactly a vacation destination, people come here because they want to play with me? Does Aaron Rodgers look at what happened with Tom Brady and said he went from New England down to Tampa, Florida, he's living on the beach, he's got a team built around him, and he won a Super Bowl? Could it be as simple as, I just want a change of scenery? I want to go out to California? I want to go somewhere warmer? I mean, it sounds silly, but he spent so long in Green Bay that I wonder if winning is enough, if he's just ready to close that chapter and start a new job, move to a new place.
No doubt about it. Because to your point, this happens throughout sports, is that change of scenery is fairly normal. And it's not that I expect Aaron Rodgers' performance to crater this year, because I expect him to be outstanding again. He's an excellent pick to win MVP for the fourth time in his career. But think about who is, I think most people would say right now, the second best coach in the NFL is Andy Reid. Andy Reid also was let go by the Eagles. I think it may have been termed at the time as a mutual parting of ways, but like, it was time for a change. And it probably happens more frequently with coaches than it does with players, because your voice just doesn't reach the room in the ways that it did at different junctures of your career.
Mm-hmm.
But it feels to me like part of this is, to your point, Alyssa, like Rodgers, not indifference, but his different evolved feelings towards playing for the Green Bay Packers. And I don't think it's any mystery that if Aaron has his preference of where he plays, it'll be somewhere on the West Coast, which is his hometown. He's from, obviously, Northern California. He's got an offseason home in Los Angeles. His fiance is a very successful actress. It would not be a surprise to me if next year the escape route for Aaron Rodgers is somewhere going west. I have no idea where that is. I can hardly wrap my mind around what's going to happen this season. I can't think that far in advance to next offseason, but you better believe if the idea of Aaron Rodgers moving on exists 6 months from right now, that whatever teams play west of, like, the Rockies, or maybe in the Rockies, are going to be at the top of the potential wish list for Aaron Rodgers just based off proximity alone.
And we know what Aaron Rodgers looks like when he feels like he has a chip on his shoulder, when he's got something to prove. If this is his last dance in Green Bay and he wants to take his pick a year from now, I am excited for the sort of show that they're going to put on in just about a month and a half in the upcoming NFL season. All right, we've got plenty more to talk about coming up on Chinay and Golic Jr. But first, tune in to an AL East battle tomorrow night as the Rays host the Red Sox. Coverage begins at 5:30 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app. The topic that I feel like I have been talking about for the last week and a half straight, and that is Texas and Oklahoma joining the SEC. As of this morning, they have accepted the invitation from the Southeastern Conference. The question now, though, is it good for college football? You're listening to Chinay and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
Chinay and Golic Jr., the podcast.
We are about a month away from college football season kicking off, and there's no shortage of things to talk about ahead of the upcoming season, as per usual, but this year feels a little bit more so, as we welcome you back to Chinay and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80, and ESPN Plus, alongside my great friend Field Yates. I'm Alyssa Lang. We're going to go out to the Goodyear Hotline, where we find Harry Lyles Jr., our ESPN college football reporter, who has been all over the story about Oklahoma and Texas heading to the SEC over the last week and a half or so. Harry, thanks for being here. Thanks for being on the show with us. Curious to get your take. Now that everything is official and things are starting to fall into place, What was your immediate reaction after Oklahoma and Texas officially accepted that invitation this morning?
Well, you know, I think by the time that that finally got done, I feel like most of us got comfortable with the idea of this happening. I feel like there's many things at play here, right? I think for all of us who love college football, one of the big things about our game that is different from professional sports is that we really love the traditions and things that go along with the game, right? In a way that is truly unique. And I think that at the initial news, it's a little bit unsettling because it's like, okay, like we're going to possibly lose Bedlam, like all these number of different things. And people are just generally, not even just with sports, but in life, uncomfortable with change. And this was a big change. But I think this morning to just kind of see that officially happen, I think it's exciting. I'm excited to see it. I'm excited for what an SEC schedule would look like with these two teams in there. And obviously, I think that there's going to be a lot of, effect with everybody else in college football, and it's going to change the game.
Harry, you probably recall that incredible quote from Giannis during the NBA Finals about how living in the past is what your ego, living in the future is something else, and living in the present is your humility. I don't do that very well. So I'm thinking about the future right now already because I'm thinking to myself, okay, Texas and Oklahoma, they go to the SEC. What's next? You anticipate that this could just be the first domino to fall in what could soon be, whether it's four super conferences or something close to that. Is that where we're headed? Is that inevitable?
It feels like it. I think the one thing that while we don't know necessarily how fast this is going to go or what it's going to look like, the one thing that the decision makers in college football are always going to follow is the money. And it seems like as we generate these larger conferences, these super conferences, whatever we want to call them, that's going to be the case because there's more money to be made. And that's, you know, part of why this is happening. That's also why Texas A&M, you know, while at first they were like, hey, we don't like this, we want to be the only team in Texas in the SEC, they also looked at the larger picture and it's like, okay, there's a lot more money on the table if we do welcome these guys in. So I do think that that's going to have a major effect on the game. And I also think that this is going to affect the Group of Five schools in a way that a lot of people perhaps aren't totally considering in ways, whether that's, you know, these Power Fives paying for some games that, you know, help generate a lot of revenue for some smaller schools, or even just, let's say the Big 12 decides to add members instead, right, as opposed to having four super conferences. And then you've got now Houston in the Big 12 or Memphis or UCF or Cincinnati. So there's many different ways that this could shape out and look. I do think that is going to go just a little bit slower than what people think. And I think that our reaction was a little bit strong just given how big this move is, right? I don't think that growing up I ever imagined that Texas and Oklahoma would be playing SEC football. And it's right around the corner, it seems.
We're chatting with our ESPN college football reporter, Harry Lyles Jr. on the Goodyear Hotline. Harry, we have about a minute and a half until we go to break, but I'm curious to get your thoughts on the college football playoff expansion conversation. We were kicking around 12 teams. A couple of the commissioners and the leaders met not too long ago. Where do you think we are in that discussion now, and does it slow down?
I think it is going to slow down, but not in a very dramatic way. I feel like right now a lot of people are looking at Greg Sankey a little funny because not only was he involved with trying to get Texas and Oklahoma into his own conference, but at the same time he was involved in the college football playoff expansion. So to be in those meetings simultaneously without making that known, I think that other people in the college football playoff meetings are probably upset. And I think that their inclination is going to be to want to not make this happen now because you're going to have more SEC teams in this thing. But again, ultimately, right, like this is all about money, more teams in the playoff, more money. It's going to happen still, I think, a lot quicker than people think.
Yeah, the goal is to find the best team in the country. The four-team playoff has worked so far for that. But, of course, as you said, this thing is about money. 12 teams means more money. Harry Lyles Jr., thank you so much for joining us here on Chenea and Golic Jr.
Thanks, guys.
Harry, you're the man.
Plenty to discuss when it comes to the upcoming college football season and beyond. Field, I'm not sure if I've ever asked you this. Would you want to see the college football playoff expand?
I would. I think that the sweet spot, I mean, I would love to see 16 teams. I think we're probably headed towards 8 or 12 before we get to 16, but I think 16 would be a nice It's not a round number. What is 16?
It's a round number.
It's a good number. That's all I know.
We'll figure out even in odd numbers in the break. We've got plenty more coming up next. You're listening to Chiney and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
Thanks for listening to Chiney and Golic Jr. Make sure to subscribe, rate, and review. You can hear the show live weekdays at 4 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, and wherever you stream your audio.